If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
What's up, NBA fans? It's Danny Green here. For those who want an inside look at the league through the eyes of a 15-year veteran and three-time champion, subscribe to my podcast, Inside the Green Room. New episodes drop every week where we take you through the ins and outs of the association's top storylines, as well as breaking news and so much more. Be sure to subscribe to Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
And Company weekday mornings 6 till 10.
A couple of big stories to get to as well coming up this hour. But before we get to that, let's get to some of the other stories that are out there in the world of news. It's time for a Donzel and Big Three at 9.
It's the Big Three at 9 on Kale and Company.
Big Three at 9 as, yes, we face record, well, we face another heat wave today, and we're all in the grip of that. Philadelphia facing the second heat wave through Wednesday. This heat in the mid-90s is nothing compared to Death Valley, which reached 128 degrees over the weekend, breaking the daily record of 127, which was set back on July 6, 2007. A high temp of 128 recorded Saturday and Sunday at Death Valley National Park. This is Eastern California, where one visitor actually died from heat exposure over the weekend. Another one hospitalized. And this prompted authorities there to put out some advisories saying they don't advise that you ride a motorcycle through Death Valley. These two motorcyclists were out there and obviously no reprieve from the heat. One of them tragically dying, but there were many others riding a motorcycle. They're saying, please don't do that. We do have record. It's hot. It's the summer.
But it's a dry heat, though, right?
Oh, my gosh.
I always love that. Oh, it's hot out, but you know, it's a dry heat.
It's a dry heat.
Okay.
As if that makes any difference. It's still hot.
Yes.
That's the point.
And you will melt.
A hundred's a hundred.
Yeesh. Gosh. Or 130 is 130, right?
Yep.
It's dry.
Yeah, but it's dry. Speaking of all the weather, by the way, Hurricane Beryl strengthening, became a hurricane again late Sunday, yesterday, and then made landfall early this morning, just a few hours ago, over the central Texas coast. And so this from the National Hurricane Center, which is tracking this, saying that it's moving inland over eastern Texas, bringing, quote, life-threatening storm surges and heavy rainfall. They're being pummeled right now in Texas, damaging winds along the coast with strong winds moving inland. So the top sustained winds, 80 miles an hour as it moved north into Texas there, into the, like I say, the eastern region of Texas. I don't have word of the damage yet. I mean, obviously, it's still moving through. Will President Joe Biden, oftentimes we see presidents, they'll visit a hurricane ravaged area. I don't see any statements from the White House at this point.
Yeah. Normally, you know, you think about hurricane season and it's, you know, August, it's Labor Day, it's well into September. Now we have one in early July. My subscription to Climate Nut Jobs Weekly expired. Are the climate people having a freak out over this?
Yeah.
I figured they would be.
Every time there's weather, even if it's heat in the summer, cold in the winter, they're like, it's climate change. I'm like, right, because it's never been cold in the winter before or hot in the summer before.
Right.
We've never had an active hurricane season during a La Nina year before, I guess, ever in terms of weather. It was great. People said Hurricane Sandy, you know, the storm that we talked about a lot last week, was as once in a lifetime. We've never seen anything like it. You know, 1991, the perfect storm. It was the exact same setup, but just instead it impacted Nova Scotia. So the American climate nuts didn't care because it didn't hit them in their backyard.
Yep.
You know, this is what we see every time, even if it's expected. Look, if it's 40 degrees, you know, in July, if it's 110 degrees in January, hey, we may be able to have a conversation. But if you're going to act all surprised when it's hot in the summer, cold in the winter, and hurricanes happen during hurricane season, I'm sorry, I just can't take you seriously. And everyone flipped out when Beryl hit Category 4, Category 5. We never see it made landfall as a Category 1 or 2. And that's not to downplay what it's doing, but come on, guys. It's hurricanes during hurricane season. It happens. This is not abnormal.
As our boy Tony Bruno would say,
we don't care about the climate.
Bruno will join us Wednesday at 8:30.
Clean air, clean water.
There we go.
Well, speaking of the climate, let's talk about the climate of politics and maybe a storm of his own, Jersey politics. The federal corruption trial of longtime Senator Bob Menendez is in its final days. Senator Menendez says he expects the jury to find him not guilty this week. The 70-year-old charged with accepting hundreds of thousands of dollars in gold bars and cash in exchange for allegedly using his influence to deliver favors to three New Jersey businessmen. Throughout the trial, I'll point out, Menendez has made on-camera statements in Spanish, with the exception of one statement late last week when he said he looked forward to his lawyer's summation today. The trial of his wife, Nadine, has been delayed as she's been battling breast cancer. There's a final witness set to testify this morning before the prosecution rests its case, and then closing arguments are set to begin this afternoon. As far as the political side of things, Senator Menendez, as you know, running as an independent to keep his job or be able to fundraise and pay off legal bills, perhaps. But he's running against his fellow Democrat and Representative Andy Kim and businessman Curtis Bashaw, who's a newcomer to politics, running as a pro-choice, pro-business, pro-parental rights Republican. Bashaw just announcing in January, by the way. And so this independent outsider, how well will he do depending on the polls? I mean, everybody expects that Andy Kim, who's a popular Democrat, and this is a tough district, though, because it's Bergen County, which is mostly Republican. So we'll see how this one fleshes out.
But a Democrat allegedly profiting from influence peddling. Where have I heard those talking points and headlines from?
You know, you brought up a good point. I think he has to change his last name to Biden before the jury comes back, and then they'll say not guilty.
There you go.
So we'll be watching that one very carefully once it goes to the jury. And number three, I saw this one in the Daily Mail today. Got to call it out. This is MTG, Marjorie Taylor Greene, making some headlines. Georgia congresswoman and, of course, Trump ally, Marjorie Taylor Greene. Well, over the weekend, she was naming, she was talking about 4th of July, the Declaration of Independence. Unfortunately, she named individuals who did not actually sign the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, no.
So they're all going after her.
Marge.
And, yeah.
Come on, Marge. I've got a Marge on my board here, by the way.
Commission of Indictable Crimes and the Abuse of Power.
Indictable. Never forget that.
Indictable. So Thomas Jefferson, John Hancock, James Madison, Alexander Hamilton, James Monroe, Aaron Burr, Paul Revere, she named, as well as George Washington. So she added, you know, some of the names that did not actually sign.
Okay.
But obviously people who, you know, had a major role in our independence, but didn't necessarily sign the document, you know, that particular document.
Yeah, she might have known that if she wasn't videotaping herself doing power cleans in a garage, but you know,
yeah,
you do you, Marge.
Yeah.
You know, so here's the thing. I would just say she needs to come here because we do have our National Constitution Center, and you know what I mean? Like, she should come here and we'll give her the tour.
Yeah.
We love the locally. It's not too far from where we're broadcasting from, and you know, this is who signed the declaration, you know, that's different from maybe those who were involved in other important documents like the Bill of Rights, mm-hmm. like the Madison was involved in.
Sure.
But, yeah, they're calling her out saying, yeah, yo, Marjorie, what about Paul Bunyan? You forgot him.
Paul Bunyan.
I know.
And his ox. Well, Marjorie's a very fit lady. Maybe she'll come to Philadelphia and she'll do the bike ride with us in 13 days.
You know, and you're right. Here's the thing. She looks very tan. And very extremely fit and all dressed in her red, white, and blue. But maybe, you know, maybe not naming names or something. She was trying to name their average ages, and they were, you know, having a, people were having a feel. She was triggering all the liberals, and she still has not deleted this.
No. Who's older, Paul Bunyan or Joe Biden? Poll question.
So I think Joe Biden spoke to Paul Bunyan when he was born, actually.
Right.
He'll probably come out with that story today.
Yes, he did.
Right? Because it's always a new thing.
Yeah.
Well, he actually just tweeted. He tweeted not too long ago and said, you know, the middle class built this country like the people I grew up with in Scranton, Pennsylvania. So mm-hmm. I replied and said, yeah, all those synagogues in the Puerto Rican communities and black churches in Scranton, PA. You definitely grew up there, Joe. Yeah. Great job.
Well, Paul Bunyan and Uncle Bozy were tight. Yeah, they were boys.
God.
Yeah, and unfortunately, they weren't using the buddy system. They weren't traveling together when Uncle Bozy got eaten by cannibals.
Correct.
Which we've debunked. We said it wasn't Uncle Bozy. He wasn't eaten by cannibals. He was just eaten by either one of these three. Chris Christie, Stacey Abrams, or Rosie O'Donnell. One of those three ate Uncle Bozy. I'm 100% sure.
It's a sick. Yeah.
Sloppy Chris Christie.
Eek. Yeah, and by the way, I think that they moved. He was pretty young yet when they moved to Delaware. Wasn't he like third or fourth grade, like he was pretty young. Yeah.
Yeah.
He says he grew up in Scranton.
He drove the moving truck, by the way.
Yeah, he drove the U-Haul like me from Tennessee.
Yeah.
Through the mountains.
When he was like 10 years old.
Hey, that's right.
That is your big three.
All right, Dawn. Thank you very much. 855-839-1210. So this is a great breakdown. I want to read some of this for you guys. Courtesy of OutKick, Ian Miller has covered the whole COVID category for many years now, writing about it extensively. And a new study published in Science magazine was released in June, attempting to study the impact of a broad range of COVID policies from an enormous variety of countries. And they look at mask mandates, vaccine passports, lockdowns, business closures, capacity restrictions, curfews, closed schools, and other different restrictions that were infringed upon our rights here in this country and around the globe. And according to the survey and the results, here's a couple of excerpts. Quote, government responses to COVID-19 are among the most globally impactful events of the 21st century. The extent to which responses, such as school closures, were associated with changes in COVID-19 outcomes remains unsettled, the study reads. Essentially, the researchers used a multiverse analysis to offer a systematic approach to testing a large range of models, and here is what they found. They examined four outcomes to determine whether these policies had been successful when it comes to cases, infections, COVID-19 deaths, and all-cause excess deaths. The data was then incorporated into nearly 100,000 analytic models to attempt to find a comprehensive, conclusive answer to the all-important question, did what we do actually make any difference? Spoiler alert, it sure did not. While some of the models suggested that these mandates were, quote, helpful, the preponderance of results show there were no associations between policies and outcomes whatsoever. They go on to say in this, you can read this, it's in Science magazine, I believe it's like, you know, their digital version on their website. Of the nearly 100,000 simulations run, 58% of the model returns came to the conclusion that individual policies and mandates had been, quote, unhelpful in reducing any of the studied outcomes, cases, COVID-related deaths, or excess deaths. Amongst the most commonly unhelpful to outcomes were the following: access to testing, school closures, masking policies, and vaccine availability. And among the most commonly unhelpful and significant were government response, stringency indexes, and workplace closures. In summation, it's quite literally a complete and thorough dismantling of the entire public health profession. So when we're here in July of 2024 and you go to your grocery store and you see somebody out there still crazy in La La Land wearing a mask or putting it over their chin, or they have them hanging from their rearview mirrors in their car like they're air fresheners and all the other stupidity. And we were mocked. We were ridiculed. I pretty much have come to the conclusion that I know the apologies are about to start coming our way. I know that they will not do this again in the future because these failed measures, they did not work. And I'm quite sure that, you know, once we get past some of this Joe Biden stuff, you know, the networks like CNN and MSNBC and ABC News, you know, they'll break in with live programming and, you know, reveal the results of one of these massive studies that show. And you know what drives me nuts about this, Dawn and Sean, is, you know, when you said to somebody on social media, oh, it's cosmetic theater, it's virtue signaling, you were ridiculed anti-science, you didn't believe in protecting your neighbor and your friend and your family and your loved one, or maybe it's just another straw in the cap of Republican. And it's crazy that you have to go Republican versus Democrat when it comes to like a public health thing. But those of us on the right side of the spectrum look like we're on the right side of the facts. And this is going to keep coming out. And Dawn, I know you've said this in the past. We're not going to really know the true impact of this for 5-10 more years. We're going to see all these other studies with kids falling behind. But like, can they just take a moment to like break into programming or at least cover it like in the C block of a telecast? Because these things are important. Because in my opinion, these same nut jobs are going to run the same playbook back again. Not if, but when the next pandemic does occur. And I hope, God willing, I'm dead when the next one happens, because I'm not going through any of these policies again.
Yeah. I think there's a reason that they don't want to cover this, because the media is and was complicit. And what happened in places like we've seen here in the East Coast, Philadelphia had some of the strictest mandates in the nation. People lost businesses. And we don't even talk about the issue of the nursing homes. And that was Dr. Rachel Levine, formerly Dr. Richard Levine, who is a Harvard graduate. As Richard Levine, you know, graduated Harvard, was a medical doctor, had his wife and children at the time, and then later in life chose a transition, if you will, and is now a biggity big in the Biden administration, an admiral. But that was that to me is abhorrent, that we're not privy to all of the information as to what they knew and when. Remember, Dr. Levine at the time was accused of knowing the information of forcing nursing homes with the most vulnerable patients to be taken, right? But at the same time, we learned Dr. Levine's own mother was moved out before that took place into a hotel. And Dr. Levine said, oh, well, my mother wished for this. And we were just granting, you know, just coincidentally, granting the wish of the 90 some year old mom who, thank God, you know, survived COVID, probably because mom was moved to a hotel. But not everybody was privy to that.
Right.
And we had some of the highest death rates here in Pennsylvania, as well as New Jersey. Thousands of people died. And the insult to injury, and I know I have friends and family, you know, you couldn't even visit. You couldn't even visit these people.
Yeah.
I mean, it was tragic. Where's the investigation into that? And so, you know, you look at like J6, and every week, even last week, we're talking about more J6 individuals who are accused of nothing violent. They're still being hunted down. Where's the investigation? Where's the committee looking into COVID-19? What did they know and when? And if they knew these things, why in God's name did they implement deadly policies?
Mm-hmm. You're right. Sean, your thoughts?
Yeah, well, I can't speak on their motive, you know, why they did it, other than they were trying to create something that looked really bad ahead of the election. That's the only thing I can think of. There's no way that you can claim, well, we didn't know it was going to take this toll on the elderly population, because you did know, because you know that if you are in a nursing home, you're older, you know, you're up there in age, your immune system may be compromised. You know, it's you're on the back nine, so to speak, not to make light of it, but you're, you know, this is the later stages of your life where you are more susceptible to these types of diseases. Moreover, we also knew that children were the most resistant to the most serious cases of COVID-19. And yet we took all of these preventative measures unnecessarily to slap a mask on the faces of all of the students in this country. And we sent sick patients into nursing homes with the most vulnerable members of society in this country during that, all while telling Americans to follow the science. Mm-hmm. What science were they following? They weren't following anything. Cuomo did it. Whitmer did it. It happened all over this. Cuomo was the first one to start doing it.
Yep.
He was, remember, Fauci called him the gold standard in his COVID response. Now we're finding out that it was all nonsense. I remember last summer they were like, is there going to be COVID pandemic amnesty? You know, those of us who said to wear the mask or social distance, now we realize we were wrong. You know, welcome us back. Nah, I have no interest in extending the olive branch and welcoming you back, because when we respectfully ask questions, say, hey, do you have any studies? I mean, yes, of course we have studies that masks work. Fauci said so. Now listen to the experts. Don't ask questions and follow the rules. Well, I can't ask an expert to demonstrate his or her expertise about an issue that is very important at the time. I'm just supposed to, you know, just blindly follow somebody who hasn't treated a medical patient in 20 to 30 years, mm-hmm. Anthony Fauci, where I'm supposed to follow that guy's advice? No, thank you. So now we're finding out that all of this stuff is garbage. We've known it was all garbage, but now it's becoming mainstream, but it's 4 years down the road. So it's the right time for it to be mainstream, because there are other things that are more important. And so, you know, you can look at it and go, see, look, we told you they were wrong about COVID. And the general response is going to be, all right, yeah, that was then. But right now I'm worried about whatever the issue is. And that's what they always do. They will go out. They will jam their agenda down your throat. Right. Look at affirmative action. They'll jam it down your throat. Then it'll get overturned. And it's like, see, we told you you were wrong. Yeah, but that doesn't matter because abortion's on the ballot or whatever it is. And they'll just gloss right over it, mm-hmm. because those who are complicit don't want to be held accountable.
Yep. I'm glad you said 4 years down the road, because yesterday, Matt Visor tweeted the following quote: yesterday, the second gentleman, which is Doug Emhoff, Kamala Harris's husband, tested positive for COVID-19 after experiencing mild symptoms. He is fully vaccinated and three times boosted. The vice president, great, Kamala Harris, has tested negative. 4 years later, we still have people, even in high positions, going to social media. Yeah, I tested positive, but I'm grateful to be vaxxed and quadruple boosted, and I've got mild symptoms. Okay, so you have a cold. Do we need to alert the public? Just stay in
As long as he doesn't have jet lag and a cold, because that creates a whole disaster, right?
Yeah.
There was Senator Dick Durbin, I think.
Loved him.
He tweeted both times. He got COVID twice, right? So he's vaccinated. You weren't even supposed to get it once, but he was vaccinated. He got it twice. I don't know how that happened. Must be one of those breakthrough cases. But he tweeted the same thing both times. I am vaccinated and boosted, and I have elicited. They literally word for word the exact same tweet within 6 months of each other. This to show you how much of a facade it is. It's so stupid.
Yep.
If you want to get the vaccine, get it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
I'm not going to tell you anything. I'm not going to tell you to or not to. I'm just going to say it should be your choice.
Right.
You know, you don't force it on anybody.
That's correct.
Especially with what we know about it now, mm-hmm. where it could be causing a lot of problems.
Indeed.
Therapeutics, and they just updated this June 25th, Paxlovid continues to be effective against emerging SARS, you know, COVID. Mm-hmm. So they're talking about the therapy. I keep hearing that from people, that if you do take a home test, if you have one, that if you take the Paxlovid or some of these therapeutics immediately, mm-hmm. then it basically wipes it out.
Yeah. It's like taking a Zicam when you start to get a cold. Pop them.
Yep.
The shame of it is, you know, after they did all of this, and you think of all the businesses that shut down, you know, in our region and across the country, but especially in the tough places like Philadelphia or along the East Coast, mm-hmm. is, you know, people were damaged.
Yep.
Either you were physically damaged, children, obviously, with the loss of learning, with also the psychological effect of it, with kids being depressed and the mental health aspect of it. But you think of this, where do people get that back?
Right.
Where does anybody acknowledge the damage that they caused?
Yeah.
And I would say another damage.
Where are my COVID reparations, right?
But seriously, everybody was, I mean, unless you were in like Florida,
mm-hmm.
you know, as soon as they knew things. And so how did they know in Florida? Who were they listening to? And it does feel political.
Yeah. I lived it in Tennessee.
You know?
Red states had far more freedom to do what you wanted to do during COVID than blue states. I mean, we all realize that.
This is the Kale and Company podcast from Talk Radio 1210 WPHD and on the free Odyssey app.
Yeah, if you're tired of your old kitchen or bathroom, it's feeling a bit outdated, you need to give my friends at Kitchen Magic a call. They offer no shortage of solutions for any room in your home. With a new vanity, and what about a tub shower conversion? You're going to love that new bathroom. Plus, Kitchen Magic always offers an industry-leading warranty. Right now, Kitchen Magic is offering something very special. 30% off select door styles and colors. You want to visit KitchenMagic.com. KitchenMagic.com. Tell them Dawn sent you.
We still have a lot of good audio to get to. It's time for What's on the Cut Sheet, part two.
What's on the Cut Sheet?
Part two.
All right, What's on the Cut Sheet, part two. Well, we're going to head down to Nashville, Tennessee, where Mr. Sean Farris resides. And, boys, this will be clip 36. We have seen these marches, these organized protests. Every couple of months, they always pop up. And it's interesting. They all look the same. They're all physically fit. They're all in uniform. And they're all kind of covering their true identity. And I also think they show up in, like, rented U-Haul trucks. Very odd. Clip 36, the Patriot Front was in action in Nashville, Tennessee over the last couple of days. And the question is, are they feds? And why does nobody ever seem to try to find out who these individuals really are? Clip 36. Watch this.
Liberty! Liberty! Victory!
Know that bridge quite well. Going across from the sporting complex into Broadway. Sean Farris, I'm sure you've probably seen that bridge or maybe walked it yourself. I don't know. Feds, liberals, Antifa. It just seems to me, because it's always like, well, these are those right-wing MAGA Republicans. You ever notice MAGA Republicans, they show their face with pride. They don't conceal their identity. Doesn't this thing just kind of stink a little bit?
It stinks. It stinks real bad, actually. And, you know, it's funny. I've organized many grassroots rallies and events before when I was on Long Island. And first of all, nobody shows up in uniform. That's number one. And we always seem to have been greeted by at least a few counter protesters. How come they never seem to be wherever these guys are? We hear about they're a white supremacist group and these nationalists and horrible people. And this is the alt-right extremism that we're supposed to be fighting against. And yet nothing happens. There's no Antifa's nowhere to be found. You mean to tell me that's the only group that Antifa can't seem to organize a counter protest to? Or are we dealing with people who are one and the same? The other thing is, you know, I don't think it's legal to pack human beings into a U-Haul. I'm pretty sure that's a crime. How come we're not hearing about any charges being filed or investigations into the fact that it looks like these dudes drove to whatever location they were at in a U-Haul? Is it,
right.
You know, are they protected? Are they not looking into it? Like, why are we not?
Yeah.
You know, you would think this is an easy target. You have a picture of these men coming out of a U-Haul. You know, that's not legal. They're supposed to be this dangerous threat to our country, white supremacists, et cetera. The media, you know, should be drooling over a story like this. It's a big, juicy story about, you know, the Confederate flag and it's in Tennessee and, you know, the streets of Nashville. And yet we don't have any questions being asked about this group. We don't have any investigations into this group. So, you know, it's like the Ray Epps training class. Like, we don't ask questions about Patriot Front. Anybody else we can ask questions about. We don't ask questions about Patriot Front. So who are they?
Yeah.
I don't know, but I do not think they're people like us.
You know, I'm a U-Haul expert. As a man who has driven a U-Haul, a 26-foot box truck from U-Haul, from Nashville back to Philadelphia in 15 hours, I may add, with minimal stops along the way. To get a U-Haul truck, well, you need a license, you need identification, you need insurance. So it's amazing to me you can track down a grandmother from January 6th, three and a half years later, that didn't do anything wrong. And these people, whoever they might be, whatever their cause might be, are not doing anything illegal in that video. But yet you can't find out who these people are, if in fact they are, as Sean Farris would say, some bad hombres. It's amazing. It's like radio silence. And the only thing you see is these videos get posted on social media, but the mainstream media doesn't seem interested in covering it, which you think they would, because any chance they have a chance to hammer home MAGA Republican extremism, they bang that drum all day long. Fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yep.
It's crazy.
Let's get to clip 39. This is great. It's going to be a big week, obviously, for Democrats, Joe Biden, and, you know, the swap watch that we are on, but also for Donald Trump. Trump's going to be on Hannity tonight. Trump will be at Doral tomorrow in Miami, or the Miami adjacent area, for a big rally. And Marco Rubio will be on, you know, on stage, I would imagine. And there's going to be more speculation about Rubio for Veep. Here's clip 39, Marco Rubio talking about Trump as president. And he just doesn't seem to recall any of the weaponized DOJ stuff that Kamala Harris and Democrats are accusing Trump of if he gets back in for a second term. Clip 39, Marco Rubio.
Well, first of all, I'm uncomfortable with the fact now that we have a president who has targets political opponents. That's what's happened under Joe Biden. Everybody, when Donald Trump was president, I can't think of a single prominent Democrat who was chased around, persecuted, prosecuted. It's funny to me to read these people and hear these people out there warning about all the horrible things they ridiculously claim Donald Trump is going to do if he becomes president again. They're the ones that have been going after their political opponents. Donald Trump has been the one that's been very clear that his vengeance is going to be by winning and making America great again, not going after his political opponents. He said that in your debate.
And he has said he's literally not going to have time to get petty and go after those who went after him. Because, you know, what's interesting in life is it takes a lot of time to fix something that's broken and build something back up. But you can destroy something very quickly. Like, it takes a long time to build up wealth, right? But you can just flush it all away with one bad investment or gambling on something. So Trump's not going to have time. Like, even if Trump wins, which at this moment I do think he will win, he's not going to be able to fix Biden's mess. I mean, there's only so many executive orders that you can issue in your first 90 days and this, that, and the other thing. Like, this is going to take some time. You know, it's not like we're going to get to Memorial Day of 2025 and the economy is going to look like it did in 2017 or 2018. So Rubio's dead right. Like, Trump doesn't have time. He only has 4 years, and it's going to take some time.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. And I think Trump is teasing he knows that the Veep stakes for Trump are, you know, especially for conservatives, but also for liberals. Everybody's having fun with the guessing game.
Mm-hmm.
I know that all the reports are this week, but why wouldn't he wait until the convention next week?
I think
to unveil it.
I think Rubio is nothing more than a tease for tomorrow's, you know, rally, because it'll be, you know, in his own backyard. I don't think Rubio's the front runner. Sean, are you still of the belief that Vance is the top guy?
I think right now, well, Polymarket's got it at has Burgum as the favorite, but he's slowly losing steam. I want it to be J.D. Vance. I don't know if it's going to be J.D. Vance. And there were rumors that were swirling over the weekend because Donald Trump just followed Ben Carson on Truth Social. And he's the only VP candidate that Donald Trump follows on that platform. Now, I'm not sure if all of them are on that platform, but it may be Ben Carson. So who knows? Now, I would rather it be a guy like Carson than a guy like Burgum, because apparently Burgum, former Microsoft employee, close relationship with Bill Gates, some shady transactions conducted with China and North Dakota, 300 acres of farmland or something like that sold to the Chinese Communist Party around our military bases when he was governor. It kind of gives me cold feet with him. You know, everyone's like, oh, he's so loyal to Donald Trump. Yeah, I don't know. I'm getting wolf in sheep's clothing vibes from Burgum. I like Vance. And honestly, I'd be more okay with Carson, because at least we know Carson, he's extremely smart. I don't care about his delivery. He's extremely smart and very loyal to Trump.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see what it winds up being. My choice is Vance. I hope it's Vance. If it's Vance, if it's Carson, I'm okay. If it's Burgum, I'm kind of scared.
Okay. Let's wrap it up with a little bit of fun. You know, we've had some, you know, very hilarious comedians on this show in the past. You know, Jimmy Fallon is unbelievable. We had Jim Brewer on about a year ago, former SNL cast member. Well, David Spade and Dana Carvey do a podcast, and they love to get into politics and imitate and mock the Bidens. Clip 44, boys, we'll wrap with this. David Spade and Dana Carvey on Jill and Joe Biden, clip 44, let it rip.
She's a doctor, but people are like It's kind of like how Dr. Pepper is a doctor, where you don't really know what kind of doctor.
Did you get that picture of Jill on Vogue magazine? If you don't worry about it.
Oh, I'll get it in my mailbox in a minute.
Mm-hmm. You did great, Joey.
You answered every question.
She's all about great. The two shots, by the way. She runs up there and gets in that shot.
You did great, Joey. Joey, yeah, you answered every question. Oh, you're tremendous.
High fives all around.
It made me think that he's not going to step down if he hasn't right before we started doing this podcast, because she's like, we're going to go, Joe. What if he kind of in a moment said, well, maybe I should step down. And then Jill. She would go, that's not going to happen. Not on my watch, you little bitch.
On a serious note, Sean Farris, we'll wrap with this. Are you and I out of line by thinking that Dr. Jill is very, very diabolical? Like, if aren't, and Dawn, I want to get your thoughts as well as a wife. Like, if your husband's 81 and can't perform the functions of the job, like, let's just say, like, remove the presidency for a moment, and you're sitting there and you're making your husband, who's clearly out on his feet, literally and figuratively, continue to truck forward in a very lucrative position, doesn't that make you less of a, I don't know, caring, loving, and understandable spouse and human being? Like, does she need the power and the limelight that much that she's basically going to keep making sure that Joe doesn't tap out?
I think so.
Yeah.
I think what you're dealing with is, you know, Jill Biden is not in love with Joe Biden. Jill Biden is in love with what Joe Biden has access to. And Jill Biden is in love with how Joe Biden can elevate the platform of Jill Biden. She is. You want to say diabolical? I don't know how she feels about the country. She may not even care about America. I think she just wants to be in that position of power. She wants the nameplate. She wants the title. She wants the recognition. She wants the limelight. I don't know if she's an evil genius or not. What I can tell you is that she is addicted to being the First Lady of the United States. She will not let her husband. Her husband could be dead. You know, in a wheelchair, people, you know, we've seen it. We've seen the comments today in the YouTube channel. I'll vote for him even if he can't, blah, 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 blah. She knows that. Mm-hmm. She knows there's a group of people who will vote for whoever the cultist Democrats put on the ballot. Right. She's addicted to the power. That's what she's addicted to. She has no love for Joe Biden. You got to be, oh, you answered every. She made him look like a fool, like a kindergarten teacher. Yeah. You know, oh, good job. You ate every one of your gummy bears. Like, this is. That's what she did. And she doesn't care about Joe Biden. If she cared at an ounce, she would say, you know what? We're going to let Joe retire, spend the rest of his life with family. We feel very comfortable giving the rest of the administration, the rest of the time to Kamala Harris. She served as a great vice president and mm-hmm. gracefully bow out. And she won't do it.
Yeah,
she won't do it.
I don't know. I have to ask my husband, Lair Bear, what he would do if I'm president and I go and I have dementia or whatever. Would he?
Oh, he'd still make you cut the grass.
Yeah, he would be like, come on, you can do it. Come on, baby.
Like, you know, I love my in-laws dearly, and I always bust chops on the air about my mother-in-law and her Trump derangement syndrome. But they're small business owners, and they've owned a catering and concession, and they travel up and down, you know, Pennsylvania, Maryland, Delaware, Virginia. And it's a lot of a grind. You're carrying these, like, big fryers, and, you know, a lot of this manual labor. And my father-in-law obviously did all of that for many years. And during the pandemic, he came down with cancer and diabetes. So now afterwards, he's cancer free, but he's, you know, he's still got to watch his sugar and things like that. And, you know, he's not as strong as he used to be. And my mother-in-law doesn't have him doing the grind every day because he's like 63, 64 years old now, and he can't do it. And I'm just thinking about that dynamic. And then I look at, and I get it, when you're the president of the United States, you're not, you know, driving around with grills and trucks and gas and fryers and things like that for a concession business. But that's why I brought up the question about Jill. It's like, at some point, don't you just have to dial it back, you know, because your husband can't literally put together a single stinking sentence. But you know what? They're addicted to power. They love the access. They love the money. Everything they've been allegedly accused of, I think, is true. And that's why they are playing this out till the final out of the ninth inning. All right, we are now approaching the ninth inning as we find out what's on tap for the Dawn Show, just about 10 minutes out at the top of the hour.
Yeah, so we'll get into Joe Biden in the Philadelphia region. So which Bible story do you think he related to? You know, Moses not making it to the promised land, or maybe a New Testament story? Is it Job? Is it Joseph and his many coats? Which story? So we'll you know, go through that. His campaign stops, two of them here in Philadelphia over the weekend, and talk about why he did not speak at the NEA conference that he was supposed to speak at, and that was last Sunday. And then we'll get into, we'll talk to Christine Flowers, obviously immigration attorney and local personality, author and columnist, and, you know, has a Sunday show on one of the local affiliates. So we'll get into it with Christine Flowers, talking about immigration, Biden, get some of her takes. There's so much going on today, so much developing. We have Congress back in, as we've talked about. Will the S really hit the fan, as one Democrat told Axios today? Well, stay tuned.
Yeah, it's going to happen, and Joe is not in the clear by any stretch. I think every single day this will continue until eventually he either blows a gasket, or maybe he does finally tap out and tag in somebody else. All right, 9:51. Let's find out what occurred today in music history.
What happened on this day in music history? Music history. Kale and Company.
Today, July 8th, we celebrate the birthday of Beck, who's now 54. And heavenly birthday shout-outs to Andy Fletcher of Depeche Mode and Toby Keith. Singles Could You Better Run by Pat Benatar from 1980. And Stop Dragging My Heart Around by Tom Petty and Stevie Nicks in 1981. Albums include Redeemer of Souls by Judas Priest in 2014, a very underrated album, I do say. Beauty and the Beat by the Go-Go's in 81. And Lost Highway by Bon Jovi in 2007. Also in 73, Led Zeppelin's Houses of the Holy was on top both the U.S. and U.K. album chart. In 79, the B-52s made their live debut. In 72, Bill Withers was atop the Hot 100 with, of course, his song Lean On Me. And in 2023, Elton John ended his farewell tour with a show in Stockholm. But lastly, even though Greg isn't here, on this day in 2003, a tooth from the mouth of Elvis goes up for auction on eBay, along with a lock of his hair and a gold record. The lock sells for over $100,000. For Kale and Company, I'm Phil Lundquist.
Who cares? Nobody cares.
Nice work, Philip. Anytime you can poke Stalker while he's away, we like that. All right, that's it for us today. Good stuff, Sean. What do you say you come back and do it again tomorrow, buddy?
Hey, looking forward to it. Can't wait for it. We're under 24 hours from going on and doing it again. I'm so excited, and I love it. It's always so much fun spending the mornings with you guys and with everybody listening. There's no better way to start your day, no better way to start your week. So let's do it again tomorrow.
All right, let's do it again. Dawn is up next. We are back tomorrow morning at 6 a.m. Have a great rest of your Monday.
Good night, everybody.
Start your day with Kale and Company. Weekday mornings 6 till 10 on Talk Radio 1210, WPHT, and the free Odyssey app.